Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. The last three guys to do a podcast are back. We're going to talk all things football here as the NFL is just almost completed week one. Major overreactions throughout the league. We'll get into that. College football week two is also in the books, and we're going to start off with that. I'm John Morgo here with the crew as always, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton, and we have with us right now the head coach of the Reinhardt Eagles, NAIA, from just up the road from where we are in Waleska, Georgia. It is head coach James Miller joining us. Coach, thanks to you so much for spending some time with us here today.
Absolutely, no problem.
Well, let's just give some background. Reinhardt is now 2-0. They have protected their 10th ranking in the NAIA. The new polls will be coming out tomorrow, but it wasn't easy. 2017 victory over the Pikeville Bears. Pikeville got moved from our division. They're now in the Bluegrass division. We are in the Appalachian, but still the Bears gave it all week. All Reinhardt could handle. It was 17-17, went into overtime. A great defensive stand by Reinhardt as Pikeville went first on the offensive series because Reinhardt won the toss. Great stand, even a blocked field goal effort, and then all Reinhardt needed to do was an Alex Hardy field goal to get the victory. So, Coach, first of all, again, a real tough victory, probably a little tougher than you would have liked, but still your kids hung in tough against the Pikeville Bears.
Yeah, I thought our kids played extremely hard. You know, going back and watching really just played with great effort on both sides of the football. I thought their team did a phenomenal job as well. Very well coached. They were one of the bigger teams we've ever faced. It was just a hard, hard fought, tough victory. And we knew that going into the game, they were a very veteran-laden team. And, you know, through the years with them, it's been tight games. I think my first year, we won right down at the end of the game. And then we blew them out a couple times in a row. And then the last couple years, they've been all pretty tight. So, you know, it's a great rivalry. I hate to see it come to an end. But they're a good football team that I think's got a lot of good football ahead of them.
Well, yeah, they had their quarterback, Bowen Smith, looking at his stats right here. He was only 4 of 12, and then they split two quarterbacks. Trevin Wofford 5 of 14, so combined 9 for 26. Even though the completion numbers aren't there, the percentage isn't there. It seemed like that they got a lot of deep balls, deep thrown passes against your secondary whenever they did make a completion.
Yeah, we gave up too many big plays. I mean, they had one kid. I mean, I'm a 6'6" guy, and they had one kid who was 6'7". Just they had some big receivers, some big physical guys, and you know, we're not, that's not our biggest position. I thought our kids battled with them all day though. And we just, you know, we gotta do a better job playing the ball in the air.
Right.
So, you know, it is what it is. Our kids battled their tails off, and you know, we made plays when it the most, and that was kind of the difference in the game.
Robert Sims III was their, I believe, their leading receiver. He had 4 catches for 133 yards, and you're right, their big receiver, 6'5", and I think our defensive backs maybe no taller than 5'9", 5'10". If you are a smaller defensive back, what's the secret to effective pass protection against these big wide receivers that doesn't result in a pass interference call?
Well, you know, it all starts with the guys up front. Got to do a great job with the defensive line, putting pressure on the quarterback. And then I think you got to get physical with those guys at the line of scrimmage. You know, when you're a smaller guy, you probably got a quickness advantage on them. And you got to try to get their hands on them and slow those big guys down. So we tried to do that yesterday, and I think we had success with it at times, and I think at times we did. So, you know, we'll go back to the game board and make corrections. Those guys will get better from this game, that's for sure.
Speaking with head coach James Miller of the Reinhardt Eagles up in Waleska, NAIA, here on The Last Three Guys to a Podcast, John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Coach, before I turn it over to Daniel and Leon, I got one other quick question for you. Billy Hall, he had 108 yards rushing. He was your leading rusher. He had great success on kind of like a fullback lead where you would get McCall Lanier, Trevae Kane in front of him blocking, and he would go to the edge. I think that's where he got most of his good rushing yards. I mean, how has his development been going this season?
He's been doing well. I thought he played well yesterday. You know, we had a couple of drops. He made one poor decision that resulted in an interception early in the game. But, you know, he's tough as nails, man. When he runs the ball, he runs really, really hard. I think he likes running the football. I think it helps him get comfortable within the game. But I thought he played a heck of a football game. I thought he really was tough, hard-nosed, and, you know, got to get him incorporated in the run and get him to do what he does best, and that's use his legs, because he made some really good plays with his feet, and we got to continue to do that to get him involved in the run game, because it just adds that extra hat that defense is really not accounting for.
Hey, Coach, it's Daniel. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. Congratulations on the win again. A very hard-fought victory for you guys. You guys got the next four games on the road were really the Kennesaw game. I mean, you know, we're really going to say that. So, I mean, it's a traditional road game, but it's right up the road here.
Yeah, it's closer to me than going up to Alaska.
Exactly, exactly. What are some of the positives and like, what are some of the things that you would be concerned about with your team, especially with these tough road games coming up?
Well, we got two, you know, the big thing is you got two long trips right in a row. I mean, Campbellsville is a good 6-7 hour road trip, and then the one to Kaiser is a solid 10-11 hours.
Yeah.
So two really long road trips in a row, and then we play Kennesaw, and I think it's Kentucky Christian after that. So, you know, and that's another long one, and they're playing good football. So, you know, we got a tough stretch. We got to take the one game at a time. I can't even think about anybody but Campbellsville right now, and that's gotcha. What we preach to our kids, take it one game at a time. We got to be road warriors, man. We got to go on the road, and we got to make it our home, and you know, just try to do the best we can every time we get in somewhere where we're, you know, not used to. We haven't been up to Campbellsville, I think, since like 2015, so it's been a while since we've been up to that neck of the woods. So it will be a new trip for the kids. Sometimes it's good to get on the road because you can get them a little more locked in. You got a little more control over them. So that's always a positive.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Coach? This is Leon Brown. One thing I do admire about your team is the fact that, you know, games are won and lost in the trenches. And on the offensive line side, I mean, I see no sacks being allowed. I see a 6'3", 170-pound quarterback going against superhumans unafraid. And that is a big reason because of that offensive line that you guys are going on. I don't want you to give away your trade secrets, but, you know, what's the preparation goes in that to dominate an offensive line in the way that you guys do?
I coach those guys. I expect a lot out of them. I put a lot on their plate. We run a lot of different run schemes. You know, we run the power, we run the outside zone, run the belly, run jet sweep. I mean, we do it all up front. And, you know, it takes time to get that nucleus kind of together. I thought the first game we didn't play our best game. I thought this game we really took a big step forward. And it's about getting those guys to be physical. It's about getting those guys to take pride in being physical and finishing their block every snap. There's been a pedigree at our school of having good offensive lines, and you know, they want to continue that tradition. And we put a lot on their plate. We expect a lot out of them. They have to practice their tails off to prepare themselves. But it's a really fun deal. I think the kids really enjoy playing in the offense because they know they get to hit somebody in the mouth. And it's fun to watch on Saturday. They play their tail off this Saturday. I mean, we'll back people around a little bit. So,
absolutely.
You know, it's, we like like to have that intimidation factor. We like people to talk about us coming into the game. And, you know, we're going to go out there and we're going to try to out-effort you and out-prepare you every day in practice. But that's where it starts. It all starts in practice.
Yes, sir.
In the right way.
Exactly, Coach. Again, we're talking with James Miller, head coach of the Reinhardt Eagles, here on The Last Three Guys to a Podcast. Reinhardt 2-0 on this young season, preparing to head up to Campbellsville, Kentucky. And if you are unaware with where Campbellsville is in the state of Kentucky, if you go to the exact middle of the state and put a pin in it, you're pretty darn close to Campbellsville, Kentucky. Coach, I want to ask you about your run game. This was the second week in a row where the running attack had a much better output in the second half than in the first half. What is the secret to try and maybe and start out strong with the run in that first half?
I really think we've got to throw the ball better. You know, people are putting 9-10 guys in the box, and I don't care how good you are up front. You know, you can't block them all.
Right.
And those safeties are coming down hardcore. And, you know, we got to find ways to loosen them up. We got to find ways to spread people out. So I think that's part of it. And like I said, there's four new starters on that offensive line.
Right.
For those guys, you know, those guys got to work together. They're still getting used to each other. They're still working out there. Their kinks and trying to get, you know, just used to how each other plays. So, you know, it's an ongoing process. You know, on offense, I mean, we really only have, I would say, about five guys that have played a lot of football for us. There's a lot of new starters on that side of the ball.
Right.
From running backs to tight ends to, you know, receivers. I mean, our receivers are all young guys that haven't really played. So it's going to take some time. And I think the thing we got to focus on, and like I said earlier, is, you know, we got better this game. And that's what we got to focus on. We got to try to get 1% better every game and just find something we can do better every game. And I think it will all start to click eventually. So that's going to be the goal this week. Mm-hmm. What can we do better? What can we do to continue to improve? And kind of move forward from there.
And speaking of your defensive line, JT Graydon, of course, he's the big anchor of this line. However,
my favorite guy.
However, last game, Matthew Prather had a pretty good game for you from the other end as well. How has his progress been going during the season?
Yeah, he's a guy that's been working all summer, put a lot of work into it. Really wanted to have a great senior year, and you can tell that hard work's paying off. Dominant on Saturday.
Yeah,
knocking those guys back, creating havoc in the backfield, putting constant pressure on the quarterback. You know, guys always about sacks. It's really not just about, you know, creating constant pressure on the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we try to do. That's what we preach to our guys. And he's a big part of that, and he's off to a great start.
Yes, he is. And finally, Coach, we're going to have to leave it there, Coach, let you go. Thanks so much for joining us. But before we go, I want to express my congratulations to you. That was your 23rd win. I told you this yesterday, 23rd win as head coach of Reinhardt Eagles. That puts you all alone in first in terms of winningest coach in Reinhardt football history. So, again, congratulations to that. Hope it's many, many more wins for you as head man of the Eagles.
Yes, I appreciate it. And, you know, it started with Danny Chronic and Drew Chronic, and then it starts with the players we recruit and the staff that I hire. I got the best staff in America. They work their tails off. And, you know, it's not just me. There's a lot of people that go into winning football games. So I'm blessed every day, my wife, everybody. So it's an honor, and, you know, we're going to try to keep it going.
All right, we'll try to keep it going next Saturday up in Campbellsville, Kentucky, playing the Campbellsville Tigers. That is going to be a 1:30 p.m. start, I believe, Eastern time. Catch all the action, the audio action, live on ReinhardtEagles.com. Again, Coach, thanks so much, and best of luck to
you
this year.
Congrats, Coach.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good day.
You have a good one.
All right. And that was head coach James Miller of the Reinhardt Eagles, now number one in the all-time winningest coach echelon in Reinhardt. He just passed Drew Kronick with his 23rd win. Drew Kronick, now the coach over at Lenoir Rhyne. The Bears had 22 wins in his two seasons. And, of course, his father, Dr. Danny Kronick, had 12 in 2 years. So you put all those numbers together. This is Reinhardt entering their seventh season on the gridiron, and they have a combined 57 wins in just over six-plus seasons. And they'll try for 58 next Saturday against the Campbellsville Tigers. And, again, 3 weeks from then, it will be Yeah, 3 weeks will be up in Kennesaw for the Kennesaw State Owls. That's going to be a 6 o'clock start, also on ReinhardtEagles.com. You can join the three of us. Last week, guys, do a podcast. We will have another live YouTube, Twitter, Facebook session. You can catch us live on that. We'll be hitting the web probably around 4 o'clock. We'll be discussing the Reinhardt game, the Reinhardt season, college football as well. Hit us up with your questions and comments right now. We'll be sure to get you on the air. Looking forward to that. And of course, that will be live from the Kennesaw State 5th Third Bank Stadium, again, just up the road from where we are right now, about 10 miles. Looking forward for that. So, guys, again, it is the NFL Week 1, and we are watching, especially Leon here, bated breath as the Chargers hold off the Indianapolis Colts, trying to get that first victory on the season. I call this Overreaction Sunday, especially if you are a losing team, as the fans from the Falcons, fans from the Browns, they are crying. They are heading toward their respective windowsills. They're about ready to jump off. Guys, who do you think had the worst loss, the Falcons or the Browns?
The Dolphins. That's who had the worst loss. I mean,
well, we knew the Dolphins were going to lose. I mean, we knew. Look, the Dolphins,
they were going to put up 59 points, though.
The Dolphins, the Dolphins are going to are trying to become the first team in probably recorded sports history to be perfect twice. Perfect,
yeah, that's right.
On one end and perfect on the other end. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's not, I mean, like I said, that's not a surprise. But
with the two teams that you mentioned, I think Cleveland's loss was a little worse because there was so much expectations for them into the season. Of course, I still think they could win the division. You know, even though Baltimore looked great, but they looked great against Miami. Can they do that against Pittsburgh and all the other teams or whatnot? Listen, Atlanta did not have a great game today, but it all started with momentum. That's the reason why they lost. They never could capture the momentum on their side. They turned the ball over three times, and all three of those times, or was it four? It may have been four.
Well, they had that early interception, Matt Ryan,
And right there, that was it. Mm. Well, actually, even before then, when the three and out was it with the block punt.
Right.
That did it right there for them. So you kind of knew that where this game was going at that time, and Atlanta never really could recover because after that, that's when Ryan throws the interception. So and then you had interceptions in the red zone, fumbles, you know, it's just a lot of things that happened in that game. But remember, Minnesota scored those points off of those turnovers, and that's what you're supposed to do. And Minnesota did what they were supposed to do. On Cleveland's end, maybe Tennessee's defense might be as good as we didn't think they were, or maybe this team might be as good as they were. Baker Mayfield didn't look all that great today.
At all.
I mean, you know, and when you have an offense that is that lethal, when you have Jarvis Landry on one side and Odell Beckham on the other side, and Nick Chubb is your running back, and then Duku is the tight end, which is going to be he's going to be a good young tight end in this league. It's going to be hard to it's kind of hard to look at them and stop them, but Tennessee did it.
Yeah, the same compliment that we give Reinhardt is the exact same criticism we give to Cleveland.
Okay? Yeah, that's right.
They lost that game in the trenches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That front seven for Cincinnati was all over Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
Chances
for
is
Tennessee.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Tennessee.
Tennessee's defense was all over Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. You can have those nuclear weapons for your wide receivers. You can have the running back. You can have the good name quarterback, but he does not have time to throw. It means nothing.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly. And also got to mention, as we count down this Indianapolis Charger game, which is now tied late in the ball game. Looks like we might be headed for overtime in that one, 24-24. I personally, I was watching a little bit first half at work today of the Chiefs and the Jaguars. Nick Foles goes down. He might be out for a little bit. Tyreek Hill, he's going to be out for a while. Minnesota goes to Hinshu the second.
Yeah.
Name you're going to have to remember. And he did pretty good. I feel bad for Nick Foles. Finally gets out from under that Philadelphia drama situation. He immediately goes down. We don't know how long he'll be out. Hopefully he'll be back for the next game. But Mahomes, he looked like the real deal. He led the Chiefs to about 20 points in the first half, even though he kind of sprained an ankle a little bit and was definitely not 100% for the rest of that ball game.
Yeah, he was spectacular, man. He reminded us why he's the MVP of this here football league, man. And to go up against a Jacksonville team who we had high expectations for, to put up 40 points in Jacksonville,
right?
And it's 104 degrees on that field, man. That was impressive. That was very impressive. The loss of Tyreek Hill was actually a little bit more serious than what people thought it was, because it affected his sternum, and he actually had to go to the emergency room for that. So, well wishes to Tyreek Hill, and I hope that it's something that doesn't affect him long term or whatnot. In the case of Nick Foles, they said he's out indefinitely. And
yes,
when you're a quarterback and you hurt your clavicle and you break your clavicle, that spells disaster for me. There's no telling how long he would be out. To me, that's a season-ending injury, but they haven't said anything yet. So, you know, we'll wait until next week's show to give that. But, you know, that's just tough. Because Nick Foles was expected to come in here and turn this team around. That's what he was expected to do. But this is what happens when you play football, man.
Yes.
You know, any given Sunday. So, you know, prayers up to those two gentlemen or whatnot. But, man, Kansas City, they look like they're on a revenge tour right now. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, from a Charger fan point of view, I hope not.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Right. But, yeah, Mahomes is definitely looking sharp. We're talking about, three touchdowns, 378 yards. That's wonderful. But not to be outdone by another AFC rival. Mm-hmm. They gave us a heck of a scare as a Charger fan with Mr. Lamar Jackson putting up it looked like a NFL team against a JV high school team out there. And that's how they should have looked.
Right.
You know, when you're playing against someone like the Dolphins, you know, that says a lot when you have teams that can play down to the level of their competition. That shows lack of mental toughness. But you have a team like Baltimore who looked at Miami Dolphins the same way we look at the Miami Dolphins, and they treated them that way.
Exactly.
And those are what the good teams do.
But, man, I mean, did we really expect for Miami to be this bad?
I mean, you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who somehow or another, man, this man keeps a job.
Yeah.
He's a starter.
Yeah, yes. That's right. That's right.
They went with him. And also, so is Miami in full tank mode? They are.
Yeah.
They have the number one pick.
Yeah, they have the number one pick. So that means, and look, Rosen and Fitzpatrick are probably there. Listen, Fitzpatrick is a great backup. You know, he can come in there and he can give you some quality wins or whatnot, but can he do that through a 16-game season? Look, like you said, John, this is overreaction Sunday.
Yep.
You know, so look, this could probably turn something. This could probably turn your season around. Chris Spielman said that though. He mentioned that he was on a team. I think it was in 91. I think it was a team. He might have been with the Detroit Lions at that time, but they lost bad in week one, and that took them all the way to the NFC Championship. So, I mean, I've seen it with Brady and company. I remember one year they got shut out by Buffalo the first week of the season, and they went to the Super Bowl and won it. So, you know, these games don't define who you are for the season. And it's just exactly what John said, overreaction Sunday. I don't expect for Atlanta to turn it over three or four times and for that offensive line to be dominated the way they were. I don't expect for Miami to give up 59 points.
Oh yeah,
right.
Every game. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I don't expect for the entire NFC South to lose every single week.
All right.
That's what it's looking like right now with Tampa Bay being down 20-14. We ain't seen the Saints yet. They play Monday night. But I don't expect any of that, you know.
Yeah, I think there's – speaking of, you know, teams that we don't expect, much, you know, that to happen every week, I like the Chicago Bears. You know, I like the performance, the defensive performance they put against – even though they lost the game.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
The defense only gave up 10 points to a rejuvenated Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So
Aaron Rodgers made a significant play that got them that touchdown.
Absolutely. So. And if I'm the Chicago Bears coaching staff, it's never good to lose, but that's like a pride victory for the Green Bay Packers, because now the Chicago Bears know what works and what doesn't work. They have homework on these people. And as a Chicago, you know, I guess they have a question with Mike Trubisky. You know, he needs to, you know, get some things. Mm-hmm. He needs to get some things going. But
right.
On defense, they look sound.
Well, as an aside, Aaron Rodgers, doesn't he look like he's auditioning for a part in a remake of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
He does. He really does.
With that droopy mustache.
Oh, man.
Well, switching gears a little bit, Steelers and Patriots tonight. Guess what, guys? Antonio Brown is a Patriot. And what helmet are they going to let him use? That's my question.
Well, he's not playing tonight.
He's not playing.
He's ineligible to play tonight.
Okay.
So,
well, they got Josh Gordon out there.
Yeah. But and they got Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown. Yeah, well, that actually changed my Super Bowl pick.
Okay.
That right there changed it. A lot of things changed it, though, because initially I had the Eagles and Chiefs.
Right.
To be the representatives in the Super Bowl. But now I think it's going to be New England and Dallas. All because of the signings that they made. Listen, Dallas doesn't win their division without Ezekiel Elliott. They don't go that far without Ezekiel Elliott. They've signed their man. They've got their guy. I think Dallas comes out of the NFC. I think New England comes out of the AFC. Sorry, Leon. Hey, listen, Falcons in the NFC. So
man, I'll be real with you. When I got the horrible news.
Oh, I got it when I was in Athens at the UGA game.
Yeah, I promise you I was going to go. I called Daniel. He's at the game.
Yeah.
I was going to call John, but I didn't have nothing good to say.
You were trying to be positive.
Yeah, I'm trying to be positive. Right? I didn't have nothing good to say. I'm like, man, I think it's a conspiracy.
I would have been saying, okay, Leon, that's great. It's 3rd and 9 for the Eagles at their own 15-yard line. It's going to be a halfback pass from Hall. Yeah, Leon, I know. The Patriots got Brown. Yeah, I know that. And Hall's going to go.
it's unbelievable on how this whole thing just played out.
Did Antonio Brown do it deliberately?
We're going to get on that next. That's what I wanted to get on.
Speak on that, Leon, because
absolutely
I'm
did
that
sure. Deliberately. Let's look at it. Yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers, since Antonio Brown's been in the league for the past 9 years, right?
Yeah.
They've had the second best season record over the past 9 years.
Yes.
Guess who's had the second worst record in the past 9 years?
Oakland.
The team they traded him to.
Yeah, Oakland.
So they did it to him the same reason that the Minnesota Vikings traded Randy Moss to Oakland,
right?
X amount of years ago.
Now is this pinned on because Oakland's front office is going to get a lot of slack for this because of the fact that, you know, they let Khalil Mack go and then they let Antonio Brown go.
Yeah, right? It's like they were petrified and dilapidated, and then when Antonio Brown came around, they were validated and verified. Now he leaves. Now they're back to looking petrified and dilapidated all over again.
Yeah. Well, the thing of it is, Antonio Brown basically bugged his coach.
Yeah.
And I don't mean, well, it probably in both definitions, of both meanings of the word. He just basically recorded him and posted the conversation on Instagram.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, fire me, please.
Exactly. That's what he was saying. And he left the Raiders zero choice.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
he didn't want to be there no more. He didn't want to be there to begin.
He didn't want to be there.
Yeah, he didn't want to be there. He wanted to be with the Patriots, but the Steelers weren't going to trade him to the Patriots.
Not.
So now the Patriots get him without having to give up any draft picks.
And if he has a great year this year, which I'm pretty sure he will,
yep.
He might even wear number 84 and channel the spirit of Randy Moss.
Who is not dead.
Right, but you know, career wise, yes. He's looking
sitting
on for the afterlife.
On Sunday NFL countdown,
right?
Absolutely,
yeah, he's doing a great job over there too.
Or he may become Ocho Cinco.
Well, and I don't think he's gonna get. Man, he's just too good of a receiver to get lost in the sauce like that, man. You know, when Chad came over, to New England. I think Chad had lost a little bit of it. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. He was, Chad was still Ocho Cinco when he left. You know, he came on. I got my theories about, you know, it can't be proven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just pure conjecture. But, you know, the Patriots are not above freezing anybody out.
Right.
They did the same thing to Randy Moss on his way out. They just froze him out the offense. And with Ocho Cinco, I believe that they did the same thing to – okay, the Chargers, like, we're about to win this game. All right. But the Patriots, I believe, froze Ocho Cinco out. I mean, you just don't fall off like that. Just fell off. And then he went to the Miami Dolphins, and they cut him. I just believe that it was a collective – it was a joint consensus amongst NFL owners – to get Chad Ocho Cinco out the league. I don't think they liked his attitude. The same reason why we see Carmelo Anthony seemingly, despite all that he has done for the NBA, cannot get a job.
Or even Colin Kaepernick, which me and you were discussing. Yep.
Right.
Before John got here, you and I were discussing that, you know, you've got this guy in Antonio Brown, this prima donna.
Who attacked physically. Yeah. His supervisor,
Mike Mayock. Although, let's be honest, there's probably a lot of people in sports media who think that Mayock should have been cold cocked a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that,
okay, we're gonna let that go. We wanted to do it.
You see a
too.
Lot of people on social media saying,
"Absolutely,
Antonio Brown, thank you." Wow, really?
But this man,
yeah.
This man attacked his supervisor and was hired before 4 o'clock.
Right.
Exactly.
By the perennial Super Bowl favorite.
Oh, you have to put them there. I mean, you look at that team. Brady has all day to throw to anybody he wants. He's got Sony Michel. He's got Josh Gordon. He's got Julian Edelman still. The only person he lost was Grunt, but you made up for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You've got weapons everywhere.
And
you've got perhaps the one of the top two receivers in football in Antonio Brown.
And they relied on wide receiver. You know, Demaryius Thomas is hurt. And they have Demaryius Thomas. He's hurt.
Yeah, and they re-signed him. Remember, they cut him and then re-signed him.
Right.
So, look. The only thing you have to worry about with New England is their defense, but their defense, I keep reminding people, their defense won the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, clearly. It was an offense.
No. Yeah, LA's offense, I was about to say St. Louis, but LA's offense, you know, was just terrible.
Oh, they absolutely. Awful, so. And I think we spoke on that in the Super Bowl, literacy.
Yeah,
right.
Jared Goff, you know, sometimes as a quarterback, you cannot rely on the sideline to see everything for you. You got to notice that Bill Belichick, being the master that he is at this game,
mm-hmm.
knew that he had a rookie quarterback out there.
Right.
That's so we're gonna come out. We're gonna come out in the 4-3, and then mid sentence, we'll switch to the dime package on you. And what are you gonna do about it? You know, you gotta. You know, and that was the beauty of someone like Peyton Manning. That's what we don't appreciate about Peyton.
Exactly.
And you know. Okay, the Chargers won this game. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good goodness. I would, if we weren't on air, I'd be celebrating a lot more.
Well,
I gotta keep my composure. I got to keep my composure. You know, we're 1-0. Appreciate it.
Got a game up on Jacksonville.
Yeah, and now we're putting Melvin Gordon on notice. You better get some get right, because we did offer him $10 million, but he turned it down, waiting for Ezekiel Elliott to get signed. But you only put 875 yards last year. Granted, he averaged 5.1, which is a great step from 3.9 the year before. But we're going to win. You know, we have this other young man that reminds me of a Darren Sproles in 2009 that just won the game for us.
Eckler, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. Yeah, I hope it works out. Hope it works out for Belvin, you know. But he hopefully comes back, because we're going to need him. But
yeah, that's my whole point. That the next man up.
Right.
I mean, Lynn said it, and I heard a snippet on the way here, and he said that we've always had that mentality, next man up.
Yeah.
You know, you can't allow yourself to be distracted by anything like that. That's an individual thing, and. He's focused on everybody that's here, and that's how you're supposed to
absolutely be. And we're missing, as the Chargers, we're missing our best athlete on defense, which is a fellow came from your team, Florida State, with Derwin James.
Yeah,
our best athlete, a strong safety, and we were missing him today. And you know, we came out.
I think Phillips is going to fill in pretty well, though.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I think he's going to feel well.
We felt his absence, though, because, you know, right. the Colts were definitely marching downfield on it. I mean, you know, Jacoby Brissett was looking great. I believe the Colts do have a pretty decent future this year. So I wouldn't overreact if I'm the Colts with this loss. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying this because my team won, but they scared me.
Well, they played very well today behind Jacoby Brissett.
Absolutely.
A lot better than a lot of people figured. Now, the Colts will play Tennessee. They'll stay on the road, go to Nashville next week in a big interdivisional matchup with the Titans. Ravens will host the Cardinals.
That's a W.
And your Chargers will be in Detroit.
W.
Yep, 2-0.
Yeah, we'll be I believe by week 6 we should be 5-1. I'm but think hopefully 6-0, but I believe at the least we'll be 5-1 at
when
the
do,
worst.
When do they see Kansas day. City?
Well, I haven't gotten that far yet, but
mid-season.
Okay. Mid-season?
We'll have some Ws under our belts by then.
Cleveland Monday night against the Jets.
Oh, they better win.
That's a Monday night game?
Yep.
What kind of Monday night game is that? Really?
That's what I'm looking at. Well,
the Jets are on Monday Night Football, huh?
Well, let's be honest. The real game is Sunday. The real game is Sunday night. That's our Falcons against the Eagles.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, people want right. to see. People want to see that.
Yeah.
Here in the bins.
Whatever kinks that are in the mix, they got to get those out.
They better fix them because Philadelphia was able to fix their kinks early today. Because Washington had them down, I think it was 17-0 at one point in time, and they came back and won that game.
Yeah, if you're fantasy football, they're starting Carson Wentz against the Falcons. Believe
yeah,
that.
Yeah, believe it.
You know, and then they got DeSean Jackson. I mean, the Eagles are just
great today. 154 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns.
And we're talking about a receiver that's 10th year plus. And you know, when DeSean retires, will he? Do you think that DeSean could be a Hall of Famer, or he'd be like another Torrey Holt, who's just a really good wide receiver, but won't get that Hall of Fame recognition?
I think, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
If he does become a Hall of Famer, it's gonna be way down the road. He is not first ballot by any stretch of the imagination because he doesn't have the records behind it. He doesn't have the numbers behind it. You have to put yourself in that echelon, and you have to start comparing receivers. Is Antonio Brown the first now? I mean, because you still have to count his antics, you know, off the field. But if you don't count that, Antonio Brown's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's going to get in.
Yeah,
but they're going to drag him.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, they will hold this against.
It's like they drag. Yeah, I think they let T.O. off of it. I think T.O. was 2 years.
Yeah, they had to let T.O. and they just drug him. He was really a first ballot Hall of Famer, but they drug him. They was holding ridiculous. It's supposed to be. I look at like the same the Hall of Fame. It's supposed to judge you the same way the Patriots judge you. And, I mean, if that makes sense, the Patriots could care less about your behavior. You know, Josh Gordon.
Right.
You know.
Right.
They'll put you on. They'll bring that. They brought Josh Gordon back. Everybody thought Josh Gordon finished. The Patriots like, yeah, right. Bring him back in. We'll go off and keep him on 24-hour surveillance if we have to. Bring him in. If Tom said he went to Patriots, he's 45 years old. The Patriots arguably have the best wide receiver tandem. I'm talking about what the squadron. I mean, is there a better name we could use for these guys? When you have Josh Gordon on one side, who's a nuclear weapon, I still think he's a nuclear weapon. And then you got Antonio
Brown.
Yeah. this is crazy. Tom Brady. I know he's just sitting here like. He's looking at Baker Mayfield again, like, hold these, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold them, because I'm about to get another one, potentially.
Like in that video for
commercial.
The NFL 100.
Yeah, I thought it was classic.
It was great. We had a whole show about that. It was pretty good. Well, before we leave topic on the NFL, because we got a lot more to cover, I'm just going to say Green Bay, Chicago, Miami.
Uh-oh.
And there was one other one, Atlanta.
Yeah.
The U.S. women's soccer team is better than you.
Oh, he's
they outscored them. They had 13. Falcons with 12. Dolphins with 10. Packers with 10. Even though the Packers won, they still got outscored.
Yep.
And the Bears with 3. They tied the Browns. Browns came in with 13. Still have a chance with the Cardinals. Cardinals have 9, although the Giants escaped that fact because now it's 35-17 late in that one. But again, we're running a little low on comp. We want to talk college football. A lot of games yesterday, and I want to turn it over to Daniel because you were at Athens. You were between the hedges like a big hairy bulldog. You watched Georgia in their glorified exhibition against the Murray State Racers.
Yeah.
What did you take from that game?
Nothing. they should have beaten them the way that they did. What I can say is when you have games like this, sometimes it's hard to get up for it,
uh-huh.
and it seemed like it was. UGA hadn't gotten up for that game yet because it was tied at 7 at one point in time.
Okay.
And they got gashed on the play, and I mean, these UGA fans, man, they are serious about every single game. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, yeah, man, it's Murray State. What are y'all tripping about? Man? You know, y'all are going to win this game. But, I mean, listen, they've got the best offensive line in the country. They've got about 3 or 4 running backs they can run with. They've got this kid, number one, Pickens, the wide receiver. He's going to be a star. He is going to be simply amazing. And then they have on the defensive side a guy that I saw that they play at a hybrid, kind of like at a linebacker and defensive end, Nolan Smith Jr. I don't know if you guys heard of him, but he's going to be a Buckus Award winner in the next couple of years. The one concern that I have with UGA is that – so this week you have –
Arkansas State,
and then you just play Murray State. So now you're going to have to get up for these games. These are not good testers for you because the following week you've got Notre Dame on a Saturday
night. Well, who are you going to schedule to be a test to get you up for Notre Dame?
An SEC opponent.
An SEC team? Okay.
Yeah, an SEC opponent. We can't say Tennessee.
We can't say Vanderbilt. We want a test.
You could put South Carolina there because South Carolina seems to give them fits every year.
Well, now that Jake Bentley is officially out for the year, they'll have to rely on their freshman quarterback, Heliski.
Yeah, they would. So that one is going to be tough. But I'm going to tell you, man, Saturday night, Notre Dame, that's going to be a game, man.
That's going to be a very good game.
That's going to be an entertaining game. But to be in between the hedges, man, it's something else. If you guys haven't been to the University of Georgia in general, it's a beautiful campus. It's a beautiful stadium as well. So I had a good time, man. I was with both of my nephews and my brother-in-law. So shout out to them. Shout out to Melvin Godfrey, Alex Godfrey, Jabari Godfrey. Shout out to you guys, man. Thank you so much for inviting me to that game.
Yeah, I was in the booth, the ESPN booth, helping out Bob Rathman for the Georgia State Furman game. Definitely wire to wire, went down to the very end. Both teams thought they were in the Big 12 because defense was definite lacking. Georgia State did have a Knoxville hangover. It lasted all of 15 minutes. They were down 20-3 at the end of the first quarter. Dan Ellington threw for 5 touchdowns. That's a personal best. He threw for 360 yards. That also was a personal best, and he did it on kind of a bum ankle in the fourth quarter, got knocked out in the third, and he wasn't 100% coming back in. In fact, head coach Sean Elliott has said that he doubts that Ellington will be 100% for the rest of the season. Panthers go to Kalamazoo next week to face the Western Michigan Broncos before starting Sun Belt play at Texas State. And before we move on or to other games of note from the weekend, Georgia Tech had all problems with South Florida. I believe they finally did beat the Bulls to give
14-10, I think it was.
Before Jeff Collins his first win in the flats. But man, we knew they were going to get beat up by Clemson, but a 14-10 result at home to South Florida, that's not how bad he should have beaten those guys.
Yeah. It was kind of edgy for all Georgia college football teams.
It was.
Ryan Hart going to overtime. Georgia State going 48-42 to affirming team. And then Georgia Tech struggling at home. I think they were at home.
They were.
Struggling at home against South Florida, a team that we still really don't know about this year because they lost a lot of talent from last year's team. The last couple of years they've lost talent. But yeah, just a struggle for Georgia Tech. But they had a hard-fought game. Congratulations to Jeff Collins getting his first win as a Georgia Tech head coach.
And also Florida State, all sorts of trouble with the University of Louisiana Monroe. They did get the W 45-44 over the Warhawks, but still I think it's going to be another long. And we were talking about this, especially in lieu of Tennessee, just escape losing to Brigham Young in overtime as well. It's going to take a while. If you just can't dismiss the coach right after these results, you got to give him time, and patience is not what you know college football fans for, especially at these levels.
They gave that man $1 million.
Yep.
I mean, politics, if they do not turn, I give them 2 weeks, two more weeks. If politics demands that someone take the blame, and politics is not known for being right, but it's a democratic process, and we're talking about mob rules.
Mm-hmm.
And if the mob, if Tennessee continues to struggle like this, and I mean struggle mildly, there will be changes being made.
Right.
I mean, that loss they had against Georgia State, I applaud Georgia State for winning that game.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that. That's the school I went to. You know, Daniel and I do appreciate it. But then you got to look at it from, you know, that didn't just put a black eye on Tennessee's program. That put a black eye on the whole conference situation.
Right.
So, and then to lose again this week against BYU.
Brigham Young. Well, at least BYU's got a tradition. I mean, this is what, Steve Young? Admittedly, they haven't been a power since Steve Young.
Yeah.
But they do have that tradition. It's not like the Western Athletic Conference, or I think.
The WAC.
I think they're in the WAC.
I thought they were independent.
That makes it worse.
Yeah. No, I don't think they're independent. Okay. I think they're in the WAC.
I know they were an independent school at one point of time, but yeah.
I'm at least going to give them a little bit more of a credit for that, because I think, like I said, I think BYU does have a tradition that Georgia State, quite frankly, doesn't.
Exactly.
Because they've been playing football for a very long time. Panthers just started their 10th season.
Exactly. That, you know, Tennessee is like the Fredo of the SEC.
They are now, yes.
My goodness.
Now they play Chattanooga.
Oh,
my. And they got to beat Chattanooga. If they can't, if the Mocs come up to Knoxville from Chattanooga, that 100-mile drive up 75, if they come up and they get that victory, that's it. Tennessee's going 0-12.
So in football, they are independents.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you know how that goes with
basketball. They have somewhere they go somewhere else.
Somewhere in basketball, but no, you're right about that. And it was funny because me and my nephew was talking about it on the way home last night. Like after Chattanooga, where do you find a win for Tennessee? Like I don't even think Vanderbilt is going to be.
Well, Vanderbilt's looking. Well, they did come back in the second half against Purdue, but they did not look very good. And then Vanderbilt gets LSU this week at home. That's going to be an L, and we'll have to see what happens the following week with Northern Illinois when they come in. Looking over our Tennessee schedule, like I said, South Carolina's going with the freshman. Kentucky just lost their quarterback. He's out for the year as well, so that's so that's two teams in the SEC that are going to be very hard to recover from. So, once again, it looks like it is Florida and Georgia, although we don't know what Missouri's going to do. But I don't think – Missouri lost a lot from last year. So I think it's just going to be a two-team race in South Carolina. They probably got the big game this week with Alabama as the Crimson Tide visit Columbia, Williams-Brice Stadium. And when you don't have that quarterback and you're breaking in a friend, although, to be fair, they did break in – Heliski did get some time in their first game, and Bentley really didn't have a good game in that first game. And I think that really I think this injury kind of takes Muschamp off the hook. I think he wanted to make that move. Now he has no choice, and at least it allows him to kind of save face a little bit. So he doesn't have to say, okay, we're getting away from this senior quarterback because, quite frankly, the freshman's better. You know, he doesn't have to do that, and now he's just basically kicking the can down the road. Wouldn't be surprised if Bentley enters the transfer portal as soon as he gets well in the off season. Other games next. Again, there's really not much going on next week. Florida, Kentucky. That's another. Probably there's a few conference games. Florida State's at Virginia, Hawaii at Washington, and then you got a lot of uh, a lot of dead weight. Arizona State, Michigan State could be a good, could be an interesting matchup. Stanford comes cross country to play Central Florida. That's gonna be.
But they got exposed by USC
right
Saturday night, so that's an interesting matchup.
You know what's interesting? You know, you got Les Miles, right? His two teams faced off yesterday with LSU and his two former teams, actually, LSU and Oklahoma, which LSU won in a dogfight. I mean, it was a heck of a dogfight.
LSU and
Texas.
Texas, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so he didn't actually touch Oklahoma. Why did I get Oklahoma and Texas mixed up?
Do not say that to an Oklahoma.
Know, just right? Don't go to the Red River Shootout. Just don't go to that, okay? Yeah.
But either or, I believe that was a very impressive win that LSU put on against Texas.
It was.
You know, and the manner in which they won, you know, it was a good old-fashioned shootout. Not much defense being played, but, you know, look where they're playing against. I like that. You know, not to digress a little bit, but looking at Florida, you know, Florida, if they have a very good chance of running the table. They will be tried this year. You know, I believe in they have a couple ranked teams on their schedule before they play against Georgia. You know, but it's a lot going on. College football, it's a lot going on.
Yeah, I think that when we look at this year's college football slate, man, it's everybody wants to say, oh, yeah, man, it's Alabama and Clemson and then nobody else. But, man, there's some teams out there, like you said about LSU. LSU is nothing to sniff at, man. You know, like, I don't think people need to turn their heads away from LSU here. They've got a quarterback that can throw the football, and Joe Burrow, he was simply amazing the other night, and I had it wrong. I thought Ellinger was going to outplay him, but Burrow was simply amazing last night. So Alabama, listen, they are the talk of the town in the SEC, and even in the SEC West, but if there was a team that could, you know, give them a challenge, you have to say LSU. And Clemson, no, you know, Clemson offensively still hasn't really gave me that wow yet. Trevor Lawrence still hasn't had that game where we can say, oh yeah, he's the Heisman winner this year. But man, that defense, they lost 5 defensive linemen to the NFL draft, 3 of them drafted in the top 10, 5, and they still gave up 10 points.
Yeah.
And they've given up 14 and 10 points, so they're averaging 12 points a game as far as defensively goes. So
kudos to that coaching staff.
Yeah, exactly. Kudos to them. The big game probably next week. I heard game day was supposed to be there, but I don't think they're going to be there now. It's supposed to be Syracuse and Clemson.
No, game day announced where they were going to go, and
they're going to Ames, Iowa.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, they're going to Iowa.
For Iowa State. Yeah, they were going to go to the Carrier Dome. But
Syracuse
got beat so bad
by Maryland.
By a Maryland team. Wait a minute. A Maryland team that is averaging close to 70 points a game over the first 2 games of the year. Now, granted, they played Howard, okay, first game.
Yep.
But, man, the take on the Syracuse team, who was actually set to do some things in the ACC this year, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. So, you know. Looking forward to some
honestly, I'm kind of glad that they're giving Iowa a little bit of love.
Yeah, me too.
Because Iowa State has just been an under-the-radar team the last couple of years.
Yeah,
really good job over there.
And Iowa can beat you with that rough play that they come in with. Very rough team.
Exactly. So, John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown, last 3 guys to do a podcast. Our 46th edition, or a little bit earlier, we talked with Georgia State. I'm sorry, Reinhardt coach James Miller in the aftermath of the Eagles' 20-17 overtime victory. Next week, we'll be talking with Rod Lanier, head coach of Georgia State men's basketball team. He'll be joining us for an exclusive conversation as we're getting close to the college basketball season. Hockey camps are going to be opening up in a few days. Basketball will follow in about 2 weeks or so. So we are getting close to that real good time of the year, and especially when September and October roll around and we can get rid of these weak sister of the poor games. We can get into the meat of the conference schedule and have some real good games. Not saying that there aren't good games in the non-conference slate. It's just that this is the time where teams are prepping. Usually what they'll do is they'll have that Power 5 game, knock it out early, get to other small games to prepare, and then move into conference schedule with another non-con game slightly thrown in there somewhere down the road. John Morgo, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. It's time to we're getting close to wrapping it up, so we're going to have 60 seconds of things you might have missed. Again, I had a very busy weekend Friday and Saturday. Friday in the booth with Mr. Bob Rathman for the Milton Buford game, won by the Buford Wolves. Very interesting ball game. This is Buford, a 5A team, and Milton is a 7A team. That Milton is the team that won the Georgia High School Championship in the top classification. First Fulton County school to win it outright since, I believe, 60s or 70s, I think. Roswell did win it in 2005, but they had to share it with Peachtree Ridge, and that's a whole story that I won't even bother to get into. Now, here's the interesting thing about the Milton Eagles. They are flying out to Bellflower, I think it is? Bellflower, California, home of John Bosco, I think is out there, one of the top prep schools in the nation, especially for football. They're taking part in an invitational. They are playing fellow Los Angeles powerhouse Junipero Serra High School, Catholic High School. That is a huge matchup for them. It's going to be regionally televised. They're going to have an incredible viewership, exposure, really good thing for the Milton Eagles. However, Adam Clack, their head coach, well, he's in a little bit of a bind. He wanted an off week before that game to get his team mentally prepared for it. Didn't happen because Coolray Field got turned into a lake due to the Corky Kell Classics. A violent thunderstorm hit Coolray Field. That's where the Gwinnett Stripers play. And a torrential rainstorm came. A lightning bolt actually hit the light tower at the stadium. So it was just a tremendous flash and boom right together. And again, the infield was just turned into muck. The field was not playable. And again, they could have, but Gwinnett was going to need it the following Thursday for a four-game set. If only they had a durable plastic that could be potentially rolled over all the dirt areas to protect the field. If only they had something like that. I don't know. What would you call that? Oh, yeah, tarp.
Yeah, it's called tarp.
And they had tarp. They just didn't put it on. Now, why they didn't put it on when they knew a big storm was coming, I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to interfere with preparations. But anyway, even if the tarp did get on in time, with 2 inches of rain fell in the dugouts. Again, the teams wouldn't have been in the dugout. They would have been on the sideline. But getting back and forth, it was like Victoria Falls waterfalls in there. So they probably wouldn't have been able to do it anyway. So again, both Buford and Milton had that off week. And Milton was going to take that week to prepare for Los Angeles. Instead, they have to play a tough Buford squad. And Coach Clack, his preparations are going to be completely messed up. And hopefully he can get his team together and get a victory for Georgia in that tournament. We wish them the best of luck. Milton's got a stud on the lineman, name of Paul Teo. He is going to Clemson. And Buford did a great job of taking him out of the equation. And again, we want to wish Milton Eagles the best of luck, representing Georgia on a national stage. And we always say that Georgia is one of the top three states in high school football. This is where you prove it, and we hope he's able to bring home a W. Let's go to Leon.
I want to, you know, with my last 6 seconds, I want to get on with the whole topic of production equals tolerance, and talent trumps character.
Okay. Well, we knew that.
Yeah. You know, it's like the unspoken rule of life to a certain degree. You know, some people say we're all created equal. Not in the workforce.
Right.
Mine goes into Antonio Brown, Josh Gordon, Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. Antonio Brown, a Texas supervisor, makes a complete mockery of his employer, forces his way out of his former team. I mean, just this man was like nonstop headlines for like the past 3 weeks. Josh Gordon fails double-digit urine analysis test.
Right.
Has a job with America's team. And some say the Cowboys. Yeah, America's new team with the Patriots as of the last 20 years.
Right.
You know, and keeps a job. Versus Colin Kaepernick, zero negative contact with the police.
Mm-hmm.
Model citizen. Never gave management too much of a fuss. you know, won the right way.
Did his job. Didn't beat his chest about his job, about doing his job.
And is without a job. Did everything right on paper.
Right.
But he wanted to go off and challenge judicial barbarism. That's what I'm going to call it, judicial barbarism. You know, we have, you know, he wanted to challenge police officers shooting tax-paying citizens, African-American citizens, on camera and getting away with it. It's judicial barbarism. But because he does that, he's without a job. And to me, that's just, he was showing great character. You know, in his tolerance on the field, this man, Super Bowl appearance, back-to-back NFC championship appearances. I mean, we're talking about this man had a three-year stretch of just success. 1-8-8 season, this man's out of a job.
Well, Jacksonville does have an opening for a quarterback. And if anyone's going to...
Here we go again, right?
And if anyone's going to give him a job, it'll be Jacksonville's owner.
Miami has an opening for a quarterback.
Miami, if I'm Colin Kaepernick, I don't touch Miami with a 10-meter caliber rod.
That's true.
Yeah, I want to at least challenge.
Right.
Yeah, I want to know that that my front office is behind me and wanting to win games.
Correct.
And not going after the number one pick, whoever that will be. And besides, they're going to draft a quarterback. They're going to draft either, what, Fromm, Tugliova, Trevor Lawrence. Even though I think Trevor's only a sophomore, so he probably won't go out. But Tua will be in, Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
That's what Miami's going to do. But
Justin Herbert.
Justin Herbert, I forgot about him from Oregon. Yeah. So again, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Jacksonville.
Absolutely.
And I hope Mr. Khan steps up and does it. But as I said earlier on another edition of this show, I honestly don't think it's how am I going to phrase this?
He's too polarizing.
He's too polarizing. The NFL does not want to deal with the headache. And believe me, that's going to be a headache. And if Jacksonville loses, the right-wing trolls are going to be all over him. Fox, everybody's going to be all over him saying, and it's like, you know, it doesn't matter if he stands up, whops himself on a flag, and walks around in a salute position. What he did has permanently besmirched him, and he'll never get it. And I mean, he'll never get that respect back. Doesn't matter what he does. He could go into Afghanistan, kill 50 ISIS members with his bare hands. He still won't get that respect simply because of what he did.
And see, that's where it goes back to his coworkers, his fellow coworkers who make up about 75% of the NFL who are African-Americans or of African descent are going to have to stand behind that man. And which, you know, just being on the same page, we've seen this with, you know, Jonathan Martin, Miami Dolphins, Jonathan Martin, Regine Cognito. It was disgusting.
Yeah,
Regine Cognito, racial epithets is on paper, everything like that. This man kept a job. Jonathan Martin, on the other hand, has been without a job because he's deemed as a whistleblower, which I don't believe how that's a whistleblower. When you're at work, you're being demeaned like that. So it's definitely like it's up to his if it comes down to that, it's going to be up to his coworkers to stand behind him. If his coworkers leave him out there, not like who was the gentleman who plays for the Baltimore Ravens right now who stood with Kaepernick? Who
Reed?
I know
not Reed.
I wanted to say Ed Reed too, but it's not him.
It's Lou something.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm thinking of Lou Reed.
I know Eric Reed was like the
safety. Yeah. I think that might have been him.
You know
that's
what? R E I D.
Yeah.
Eric Reed.
Eric Reed.
Yeah. You know, the rest of the
is
rest
he with Baltimore now?
He yeah, absolutely.
With Carolina.
Yeah, he's with Baltimore now.
Okay.
And his teammates, his coworkers are going to stand, or if it even comes down to that point, because I don't even think he's even going to get the opportunity. But if it comes down to it, his coworkers are going to have to stand with him. And be like, hey, despite him playing on different teams, we all do are going in the same – we do believe in the agenda. And the agenda is what Jay-Z has got hired on by Roger Goodell to bring about, you know, help out with social change, whatever the heck that means. It's so vague, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's the point.
And he just gave $400,000 to an All Lives Trump supporter nonprofit. So I don't understand what he's doing right the minute. That's a whole other subject. But, yeah, it's production equals tolerance, but or does it really? So – that's my 60 seconds times three.
All right, Daniel, you're up.
All right. The best thing I saw actually like over the last week or so actually happened in tennis. And, you know, it's three young ladies who I think we should actually give credit to. One is Coco Gauff. The other is Naomi Osaka. And the other is, of course, the great Serena Williams. I think these three women just – are right now the standard of what tennis should be about. So last week, I think after the show, Coco Gauff faced off with Naomi Osaka. I believe it was in the quarters. It was in the round of 16. It was in the round of 16. Of course, Gauff loses the match to Osaka. But at the end of that match, it was what Osaka did. She actually told her, why don't you come and do the post-game interview with me? Mm-hmm. You know, instead of going back to the locker room and crying and all of that stuff. I thought that that was one of the greatest gestures you could ever do. Now, this game, I think for the women, for the U.S. Open this year, this was one of the more emotional ones.
Right.
Because after that, Naomi Osaka lost her quarterfinals matchup. And I think it had so much to do. I think it had so much to do with the match that she had with Coco Gauff. If you go back and look at that match, mm-hmm. every point she won, it looks like she did not want to win that point.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It was like, man. But needless to say, it was like what I said in my letter a couple of weeks ago about girl power. Coco Gauff is coming.
Yeah, she's
15 years old. This girl is coming, man. Yeah, we can't put the weight on her shoulders like that immediately. You know what I'm saying?
I think she should follow the lead of her father and play women's tennis for Georgia State.
Yeah, there you go.
Although his father played basketball for the Panthers.
Yeah, exactly.
In the 80s, so we do have that connection to Coco Gauff.
And of course, Serena Williams, who the seventh time she's failed to reach that pinnacle and tie the Grand Slam record, she lost to Bianca Andreescu 6-3, 7-5. And listen, Serena is still great, man.
Yeah, she's still one of the greatest athletes of all time. Yeah. Definitely the greatest women's athlete of all time.
Exactly.
And maybe the greatest all-time athlete, but that's a conversation for another day.
Arguably most successful.
Yeah, definitely.
And my thing is that, listen, Serena's going to get it. She's going to get it. It's just been a tough road for her. Of course, she just had a baby. So it's going to get there. Listen.
And she almost died from that pregnancy.
Exactly. So, yeah. you have to give her time. So kudos to these three women here. The U.S. Open was just simply phenomenal. It just some great stories that came out of it.
Definitely. And again, that's a story for another time, another week. And speaking of another week, it'll be Rod Lanier will be our guest on The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast, an exclusive interview with Coach Lanier leading up to the start of Georgia State basketball, fall basketball practice. You don't want to miss it here. I'm John Morgan for Daniel Bolton and Leon Brown. We are The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast, and we are done for this week. Appreciate all your listenership. Hope to have you on as we go on further. Hope to get it on more platforms, and we'll see what's happened. So we'll see you down the road. This has been The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, and we are out.